Doesn't matter how many tenors you hear in your life, that one is always unmistakable. Luciano Pavarotti singing Nessun Dorma from Puccini's Turandot, bringing the in-tune mixtape to a close for this evening. Half an hour of uninterrupted music every weekday evening at 7 o'clock, which you can also download to take with you on the iPlayer radio app. Find more details of how to listen to the in-tune mixtape digitally on the Radio 3 website. And Sean Rafferty will be back tomorrow with in-tune at 5 o'clock. His guests include the violinist James Ennis. And you can also catch up with Composer of the Week, as usual, on air at midday and also online via the Radio 3 website. It's incredibly easy to find there. This is BBC Radio 3. It's just gone 7:30. I'm Sarah Moore-Peach, and a very warm welcome to Opera on 3, the climax of Opera Passion Day. It's been 8 hours of live streams and special events from across the UK, broadcast both here on Radio 3 and also on BBC Arts Digital. Do check out the Radio 3 website for more details. The time has come now for us to hear the opera that you voted for. We've had four operas up for grabs tonight: Gounod's Faust, Wagner's Flying Dutchman, Mozart's Magic Flute and Puccini's Tosca. You've all been busily voting for your favourite, inspired by four opera advocates. James Naughtie stood up for Gounod, Stephen Fry for Wagner, Shelley von Strunkel for Mozart and Harriet Harman for Puccini. And if you were listening to In Tune earlier, you will have heard Sean Rafferty announce the winner being Puccini's Tosca. Well, I'm joined during the course of the evening by Sarah Lenton, opera historian and enthusiast. Welcome to Opera on Three.
Good evening.
Now, tell me, Sarah, do you think it's a surprise that Puccini's Tosca was the winner of those four?
No, Puccini fills opera houses. He's only got seven operas and every one of them's a winner. And you steered the audience, if you ask me. I mean, Opera Passion Day, and blow me, everybody's, well, not everybody, but an awful lot of people have voted for the one of the most passionate shows in the rep. Yeah. And the three great operatic voices, tenor, soprano and dodgy baritone, couldn't be better. And a sort of melodrama. I mean, you know, the action is fairly melodramatic and driving and energetic, but very secure emotionally. There's an emotional truth to this show. Mm. So you can watch all the hijinks on stage, but actually, ultimately, you watch Tosca. She's a generous and intelligent woman.
Let's talk a bit about this production that we're going to hear the recording of. It was in 2011 at the Royal Opera House, Antonio Pappano conducting, and you mentioned those three voice types, and we kind of have the greatest, perhaps, of all of them who grace the opera stages of the world. So soprano Angela Gheorghiu in the title role of Tosca. Jonas Kaufmann, who you can, of course, see lots of on the BBC Arts online website. There's quite a lot of him about the opera season, but just a fantastic tenor with such an intelligence as well as, yeah, as vocal agility and beauty. And then our Scarpia is Bryn Terfel.
Yeah. It was an amazing show, not the least at the Opera House, because it was replacing the very famous Callas Tosca, which is what everybody remembers it as. And
which ran for about 40 years, didn't it?
It was early 60s when it started. And yet, as we all trooped into the Opera House on the first night, we thought, oh, come on. Tosca is director-proof. And it's set so specifically in its period, we're all pretty sure that it would be a proper frock show. And the interest was, well, what are you going to do with this? We've got to be in 1800. And wonderfully, it's a Jonathan Kent production, isn't it? He had a top level, which seemed to be heaven, and lots of church-like things happened there. And then on stage, murky things happened with chiefs of police and political prisoners. And you suddenly thought, is this heaven and hell we're watching here? So there was this astonishing metaphysical dimension to it as well. And absolutely gripping performances, of course.
You mentioned the kind of specific setting of the opera. So we are over 2 days in June 1800.
Yes.
So 100 years before Tosca was actually first seen.
Yes.
What is so specific about that time in history? It's set in Rome. What was happening around that time in Rome that makes Puccini want to set Tosca there?
Well, it's a Sardou play, a French play, and it's the moment where the French are going to come down the peninsula again. They've already retreated up the Italian peninsula, but they're coming down again in the Napoleonic Wars. And it's the Battle of Marengo happens up the top of the peninsula. And the news slowly comes down the peninsula that the battle's happened. And what happened, as what did happen, was the false news came first that the Allies had won. Fantastic. Act two, beginning of act two, fantastic. In fact, end of act one, that's the news. And then the second messenger appears and this is not the case, the French are on the way. Bad news for the villain, because he's part of the repressive government. Great news for the tenor, who is understood to be a young radical.
Right, of revolutionary spirit. This is Cavaradossi.
Yes. I mean, actually, he spends the whole opera thinking about Tosca and his painting, and there's nothing political about him whatsoever.
And to be fair, Scarpia spends most of the opera thinking about Tosca as well, and not about his political motives. We'll, of course, come to Scarpia later in Act Two. Yeah. And not just the specific date on which this is set, but it's also three specific locations. Each act takes place in a different real location in Rome.
First one is San Andrea del Valle. And I remember one great Tosca where they went to the wrong San Andrea to set it and they couldn't work out why none of it worked. So you have to get it right because the chapels are placed the way they are. So San Andrea and then Palazzo Farnese, where Scarpia seems to have got a sort of bedsit there and he's operating the secret police from there. And then, very famously, the top of Castle San Angelo. And so specific, even Puccini, who really can fiddle around with things, said to the set designer, "You've put the Tiber on the backdrop. You can't see it from up there."
Gosh.
And
so really specific. Now, it's interesting because that brings us to something that you mentioned earlier, which is that Puccini is director-proof. What exactly do you mean by that?
Puccini directed his own shows. He had one show, I think it was Manon. Or perhaps even earlier, perhaps it was Villy or something like that. I think it was the Villy, where he wasn't in control of the stage action. And part of the flop, as he felt, was due to the fact he wasn't directing the show. And he would say, alarmingly, "A false timing in the drop of a curtain will ruin a piece," which is something that stage managers just don't want to hear.
But speaking of stage management, I mean, there are props all the way through Act One, which are written in and you can't really do without.
You've got to have a statue of the Madonna, you have got to have a key, you've got to have a chapel, a picnic basket and a fan.
So, look, very briefly, let's just give the synopsis of Act One. We are in this church, San Andrea della Valle. Our characters are Maria Cavaradossi, who's a painter, who's busy working on a painting of Mary Magdalene. His girlfriend, Tosca, is a fantastic singer and a little jealous of the painting because it's not actually resembling her. Mm-hmm. And this political prisoner, Angelotti, is hiding out in the church. And it all seems to sort of hinge on Cavaradossi trying to hide Angelotti and Tosca coming back in, and then Scarpia turning up, the head of the secret police, and trying to trap both Cavaradossi and this political prisoner he's trying to hide, and also Tosca, because Scarpia, of course, has feelings for her, of perhaps the worst kind. And then there's this amazing moment where the choir sings the Te Deum towards the end of Act One.
It is the most astonishing show. I mean, Scarpia moves in on Tosca's jealousy and brilliantly manipulates it, and then the Te Deum builds up and then breaks out. And suddenly, Scarpia, who's been thinking lustful thoughts of Tosca, breaks into the Te Deum and says, "Tosca, you have made me forget God," and joins the Te Deum with every appearance of sincerity. The most astonishing moment.
Let's hear Act One of Puccini's Tosca, then, a Royal Opera House production recorded in 2011. Angelotti is sung by Lukasz Jakobski, the sacristan by Jeremy White, Cavaradossi, the tenor Jonas Kaufmann, Tosca, the soprano Angela Gheorghiu, and Scarpia, sung by Bryn Terwyl and his henchman Spoletta, Hubert Francis, and the orchestra of the Royal Opera House, conducted by Antonio Papano.
Eccellenza, vado!
Fai piacere!
Vieni, panieri, fa penitenza!
Fame, nano!
Oh, mi ricresce! Va di qua, esci giù!
Vado!
Thank you. Oh, lasciami.
Tu fino a stasera stai fermo al lavoro e mi prometti se a caso fortuna si attreccia bionda o bruna a pregar non verrà donna nessuna.
Lo giuro, amore, ma... ancora.
Perdona.
Davanti la Madonna.
Del giardin l'acqua è nel fondo, ma a mezzo della canna un piccolo varco guida ad un altro oscuro rifugio impenetrabile e sicuro.
Senza dar sospetti, ora te, pesa le tue risposte, un prigionier di stato, fuggì pur ora da Castel Sant'Angelo.
Se rifugiato qui, misericordia!
Forse c'è ancora, dov'è la cappella di Liattavanti? Eccola! Aperta! Arcangeli! Nell'altra chiave un indizio! Entriamo! Un grave quel colpo di cannone, il mariolo spiccato e il volo, ma lasciò una preda preziosa, un ventaglio. Qual complice il misfatto preparò? Avanti il suo stemma. Il suo ritratto, chi fa quelle pitture? Che cavalier cavaragiosi? Lui ingegnere, lui amante di Tosca, un non sospetto, un molte lian.
Vuoto, vuoto?
Che detto, che fu? Si ricordo nella cappella, questo che tu lo conosci,
gesto del pittore, non di meno, scuota quello che sai. Io non la sai ripieno di cibo prelibato. Il pranzo del pittore avrà pranzato nella cappella, non ne aveva la chiave, né contava pranzar, disse di stesso, proprio l'aveva già messo al ripacco. Libera me domine.
Chiaro la provvista del sacrista d'angelo che vola preda. Tosca che non mi veda per ridurre al geloso e lo sguaraglio piano più fazzoletto e mio. Essa nel fuggir per te ne penne.
pace, signora.
Una ripelle lacrima scende sovra le pelle quancia l'errora.
Dolce signora, che mai va ora?
Sbirri, una carrozza, presto, seguila dovunque vada, non vi sto, provvedi.
Sta bene, ti contendo.
Palazzo Farnese.
Act one of Puccini's Tosca, ending with the same gnarled chords as the opera begins. That Royal Opera House production we just heard featured the wonderful Angela Gheorghiu as Tosca, Bryn Terwyl as the menacing Scarpia, and Jonas Kaufmann as the painter Cavaradossi. Jeremy White was the sacristan, Lukas Jakobski, Angelotti, and Spoleta, Scarpia's henchman, sung by Hubert Francis. And the orchestra of the Royal Opera House, led by Vasco Vasilev, the chorus master, Renato Balzadonna, and the chorus absolutely vital to the drama at the end of Act One, singing that Te Deum, and conducted by Antonio Pappano. And we're hearing the entirety of Tosca tonight on BBC Radio 3 because you voted for it as the opera you most wanted to hear. Tosca won out over Mozart's Magic Flute, Wagner's Flying Dutchman and Gounod's Faust. And tonight is the culmination of Opera Passion Day, part of the BBC Opera season. In fact, there's loads to see on the BBC Arts online website and also on the Radio 3 website. There's a lot of Jonas Kaufmann out there, his recent performance of Verdi's Otello from the Opera House, which we'll also be broadcasting tomorrow on Radio 3. And you can also see John Bridcut's brilliant fly on the wall documentary, Jonas Kaufmann, A Tenor for the Ages. I'm Sarah Moore-Peach, and I'm joined this evening by Sarah Lenton to talk about Tosca. Sarah, I was watching that John Bridcut documentary, and one of the things that I was reminded of was the thing that happened the year before this production, which is that Jonas Kaufmann and Angela Gheorghiu were performing Tosca together in Vienna, and there was this extraordinary moment which has kind of gone down in Tosca history where she didn't turn up for one of her entrances in Act 3, I think, and he did this brilliant bit of Italian ad-libbing, saying, "You're singing, we've lost the soprano." But, you know, those sorts of things, of course, happen in opera history, and I'm sure there are many Tosca stories.
Well, you see, Tosca's so tightly constructed by Puccini that you can't muck around. An ad-lib is fatal because you've lost the prop, or you haven't put it down in the right place. My favourites, I mean, everybody's got the jumping off the battlement stories, but my favourite is the killing of Scarpia stories, partly because when Maria Callas did it at the Royal Opera House, she was slightly, she was very short-sighted, and her Scarpia had to sort of help her. So once she'd killed him, Gobbi used to fall down on the stage with his face upstage and blink at her to cue her in, to find the candles and put them in the right spots round him and things like that. And always you think, is she going to find the fruit knife? This is absolutely crucial to the show. There's a lot of flashpoints in Tosca.
We're going to come now to Act Two. We talked before Act One about the specific location it took place in, the Church of Sant'Andrea della Valle. Mm. This act is set in the Palazzo Farnese, which is Scarpia's apartment. Again, a real place in Rome. In fact, now I think the French Embassy, in Rome,
yes.
and was, you know, owned by the French government in Puccini's day. What actually happens then in Act Two in this apartment?
Scarpia is waiting to see whether they've found Cavaradossi and indeed found Angelotti. They find Cavaradossi all right, but Angelotti's hiding in a well in the garden. So they bring in Cavaradossi anyway, because he's been cheeky. And Tosca, Scarpia presses him to admit that he's hiding Angelotti. Cavaradossi refuses. And then off stage, Tosca starts singing, and it destabilises both men. They can hear her in a cantata in what must be the Palazzo Gardens.
And indeed, quite a lot happens off stage in Tosca. I mean, although there is this very sort of heightened drama intensely happening in these enclosed spaces on stage, there is a lot that happens off stage.
I mean, the story happens off stage. There's a battle of Marengo going on, and there's a messenger or two messengers rushing up Italy. But actually, things are happening off stage. So as you watch the show, you're aware there is this cantata off stage. Cavaradossi in the scene is taken away and tortured off stage. And if you're used to the theatre world, you think, can the musicians see to play that cantata? And will they see when the window suddenly goes down and it cuts them out? And even more interestingly, what is happening to Cavaradossi in the torture chamber? Well, I can tell you what's happening. He's taking off his clean shirt and he's putting on his bloody shirt and he's getting his makeup on.
Oh, don't give the game away. But it's interesting because although you've just, given away in a sense the sort of what happens behind the scenes, on stage, the menace of this act is so extraordinary, the brutality of it.
I have to tell myself that's happening off stage, because when I watch the show and I hear those terrible cries coming from the chamber, my imagination does the whole thing for me, and I'm horrified.
This is also very much an act that belongs to Tosca and Scarpia. It's really their showdown, particularly towards the end. Tell us a bit about that. What's happening between them? What are they wrestling with?
Scarpia, his great plan is to kill Cavaradossi and seduce Tosca and then throw her aside. And conquest is all that he's really after. Her agenda, once she realises how dangerous it all is to save Cavaradossi at any price, including giving her body to Scarpia. And it depends on your Tosca, because there is sort of room to manoeuvre a bit, as to whether there's a hideous fascination with Scarpia or not. It can be complete revulsion, and it can be revulsion because he's horribly attractive. It's completely up to the Tosca, so that dynamic between them is very, very interesting. But both of them have still moments. Scarpia starts the act by singing about his terrible sort of credo about he just loves all the good things of his life and then throws them away. But bang in the centre of this act is Tosca wrestling with this great dilemma. And it's a dilemma for her. I've done all this singing for God. I've given all my jewels and flowers to the Madonna. I've done absolutely everything I can with my art. I've lived for art. Why is this happening?
This is the aria Visi d'arte.
Yes.
Which is perhaps the most famous moment, or second most famous moment in the opera. Perhaps that will come in Act Three with Eluce van la Stella. Mm.
And to watch that again is to see what the singer wants to make of Visi d'arte. Is it a performance? Is it a performance for Scarpia? Is it meant?
And what is your memory of what actually happened in this Jonathan Kent production? Because you seem to have a sort of photographic memory, an encyclopedic memory of every opera production that's ever taken place in the UK.
I was very impressed with this one. I mean, she quite traditionally went on her knees, so it was a prayer. The Scarpia stood back and had his coffee and enjoyed the performance of the diva. So you had that edge about how much of a show was this. Always the Tosca meant it passionately and with utter dismay. And in that set, they had a huge statue of the Archangel Michael. And I noticed his wing shadowed the soprano and sort of almost touched her. And in the shows I saw, the sopranos would get resolutely to their feet, having gone through this utter dismay, with something very secure.
Let's also just mention what happens at the end of this act, very briefly, which is that he doesn't get her. She stabs him.
Yes. The kiss of Tosca turns out to be a fruit knife through the third rib.
Ooh.
And there's a lot of blood. But she secures the pass that will take her and Cavaradossi to freedom, as she hopes. And she thinks that Scarpia has set up a mock execution not a real one.
So that Cavaradossi will be safe. We'll find out whether that worked or not in Act 3. But for now, let's hear Act 2 of Puccini's Tosca, recorded in 2011 at the Royal Opera House. Angela Gheorghiu and Bryn Terfel as Tosca and Scarpia, Jonas Kaufmann as Cavaradossi, Yung-Jung Jo as Sciarrone, and Hubert Francis as Spoleto, and Antonio Pappano conducting.
E strimpellan gavotte, tu attenderai la Tosca in sull'entrata, e dirai ch'io l'aspetto finita la cantata. O meglio, darai questo biglietto e la verrà per amor del suo Mario. Per amor del suo Mario al piacer mio s'arrenderà. Parte i profondi amori e la profonda miseria, a più forte sapore la conquista violenta che il mellifluo consenso. Io di sospiri e di lattiginosi al velo d'ari poco m'appago, non so trarre accordi di chitarra né oroscopo di fior, né far l'occhio di pesce o tu par come tortora. Sorella,
entri in buon punto. Oh, galantuomo, come andò la caccia?
Santo piazzo, maiuto, se la signora seguimo la traccia, giunti a una navilletta tra le frate perduto, e la ventrò, e si sole ben presto, allor scavalco l'estro il muro della gincone ai cagliotti, e piombo in casa.
Quel bravo Spoletta,
fiuto, razzolo, frugo.
Poi, Angelotti,
non si è trovato,
a cane, a traditore, ceppo di basilisco, alle folte!
Gesù! C'era il pittore!
Cavaradossi!
Ne so dove la ciò s'asconde, ogni suo gesto, ogni accento trazia, tal defarda ironia, ch'io lo trassi in arresto.
Meno male.
Egli è là.
Introducete il cavalier. A me Roberti e il giudice nel fisso. Qual violenza, cavalier, vi piaccia accomodarvi? Può sapere, sedete, aspetto, e sia. Venuto che è un prigione.
La sua voce.
Oggi è fuggito da Castel Sant'Angelo.
Ignora!
Pur si pretende che voi l'abbiate accolta in Sant'Andrea, provvisto di cibo e di vestito.
Menzogna!
E guidato ad un vostro podere suburbano.
Nego le prove.
Un suddito fedele
al fatto. Chi m'accusa? I vostri birri fan frugar la villa.
Segno che ben celato
sospetti di spia.
Alla nostra ricerca
Oh.
dove dunque Angela te?
Non lo so!
Ancora l'ultima volta! Dov'è?
Non so!
Quell'aria sgomentata.
Sgomenta il mondo.
La storia del ventaglio
fu sciocca, gelosia.
L'attavanti non era dunque alla villa. Ad ogni lieto ne strizza
Fatelo qui.
Pozzo del giardino, vasto detto!
Mai tradito!
cena fu interrotta. Così accasciata via mia bella signora, sedete qui, volete che cerchiamo insieme di salvarlo? E allora sedete e favelliamo. E intanto un sorso e vin di Spagna, un sorso debbo tradir, ne voglio altra mercede, ne voglio altra mercede, quest'ora io l'attendeva. Già distrugge Quando non ti vidi mai,
serpeggiava mie brame in ferocia. Fagil cuore odardo, t'affigliesti all'amante, speranza. La regina farebbe grazia ad un cadavere. Si compia la si drizza un patibolo. Al tuo Mario per tuo voler non resta che un'ora di vita.
a te che con istante.
Chi
va?
Eccellenza, d'Angelotti a nostro giungere s'uccise.
Per quello si appenda, porto le forche. E l'altro prigioniero.
Ma voglio il padre Dossi.
È tutto pronto, eccellenza.
Dio m'assiste.
Aspetta. Simular, non posso far grazia aperta. Bisogna che tutti abbiam per morto il cavalier. Quest'uomo fido provvederà.
Ti m'assicura?
L'ordin ch'io gli darò, poi qui presente. Spoletta, chiudi. Ho mutato d'avviso. Prigionier sia fucilato. Attenti, come facemmo del conte Palmieri.
Un'uccisione
simulata, come avvenne del Palmieri. Hai ben compreso?
Ho ben compreso.
Vai avvertirlo io stesso.
E sia, le darai passo. Vada, allora quarta.
Sì, come Palmieri.
Io tenni la promessa.
Non ancora. Voglio un salva condotto onde fuggir dallo stato con lui.
Partir dunque volete?
Sì, per sempre.
Si adempia il voler vostro.
Thank you.
Oh.
So Tosca, the singer, has murdered the evil Scarpia. Her beloved Cavaradossi has been tortured and is awaiting his execution. But before Tosca killed Scarpia, she got him to arrange that the execution be carried out with blanks instead of real bullets and guarantee Tosca and Cavaradossi safe passage out of Rome. The close of Act Two of Puccini's opera, the orchestra of the Royal Opera House, conducted by Antonio Pappano in that recording from 2011. Tosca, sung by Angela Giorgiu, Cavaradossi by Jonas Kaufmann, and Scarpia by Bryn Terwyl. And Annie Blackmore on Twitter says he's a superb Scarpia, menacing and repellent. Sarah Lenton, my guest this evening, Scarpia absolutely has to be menacing and repellent in that, doesn't he?
Absolutely. There's a very famous story that Gobbi said...
Tito course, Gobbi, this is.
Yes, he was Tito Gobbi, the great Scarpia, yes. The show is all about Scarpia. And his Tosca said, excuse me, can I just run past you the title of the show? And you die at the end of Act Two. I am even more present in Act Three, he said.
Well, we will come indeed to Act Three in just a moment. This broadcast of Tosca is the culmination of Opera Passion Day, a day of live broadcasting from across the UK. Do head to BBC Arts Online to find lots to watch as part of the BBC's opera season. And here on Radio 3, Puccini is our composer of the week. Today, Donald MacLeod was looking at another of his great operas, Madame Butterfly. Sarah, I'm just turning again to Twitter. People have been using the hashtag Opera Passion Day. Peter Cole says, Act Two of Tosca represents one of the highlights of all opera. Puccini was a genius. I'm curious to know, because clearly we both feel that this is a really exceptional opera from the canon. What is Puccini's real genius? How does it show itself in Tosca?
He is the last of the great Italian opera composers in a certain tradition. He really was the heir to Verdi, and we're so lucky he managed to at least write seven operas, because the tides of critical opinion was turning against him. And he found it very baffling and difficult. You mentioned right at the beginning of this programme, this show was written in 1900. And, you know, suddenly you're into the 20th century. And Puccini is a 20th century composer? Yes, indeed. I mean, many people would say Fanciulla del West sounds like a film score. And there are strange bits of Second Vienna School in Turandot. But really, what we're hearing is great lyric singing by a composer who completely understood Italian theatre, Italian singers, and how to present that great voice without the orchestra, which is huge, drowning them.
It does always astonish me that it was first heard at La Scala under Toscanini in 1900, because it does feel to me like such a 19th century opera and not like a 20th century opera.
No, it's a culmination of a great tradition, and of course the melodrama gives you that. But also, it's, as I said, it's his emotional truth. You get the great moments for the singers in this, particularly the still centre of Act Two, Visidate, and then building up to that crescendo and the murder.
And we should say something also about Angela Giorgiu's delivery of Visidate, which was just exceptional. Her voice is so rich, actually, in that role.
I was very, very impressed with her performance as Tosca. Every bit of it, obviously the great set pieces, but the whole thing was unified. And when she had to go into speech, and astonishingly Puccini asks great moments where she suddenly says, quanto? How much is that going to cost me? You know, that sort of thing. She went straight into speech, absolutely no problems. Wonderful performance.
Absolutely. Well, let's come to Act Three and what's going to happen in it. So far, we've been in two Roman locations. So we began in the Church of Sant'Andrea della Valle, and then we've just been in the Palazzo Farnese. And now we're going to end up in this famous location for Act Three in the Castel Sant'Angelo, where Cavaradossi is imprisoned, waiting to be executed. And Tosca, having had her great Visidate moment in Act Two, Cavaradossi now gets his great tenor aria, Il Lucevan le Stelle. What's actually going on for Cavaradossi in this moment? What's he singing about?
As he's a French, ultimately a French character, of course, he's not going to see his priest at this moment. He's offered a priest. He says, no. I'll just sit here and look at the stars and think about Tosca. And he looks up, poor fellow, and says, yeah, the stars were shining brightly when I first saw her. And, of course, the stars are waning. It's dawn. And so you've got this wonderful, beautiful night turning into the grim dawn. And very famously, the bells have been tolling for dawn. And I say tolling because it does eventually sound as though they're tolling for him. And so wonderfully, Puccini gives you this great tenor aria, but still the drama and the lighting. He loved lighting and he loved dawn scenes, are also taking you right through that aria and onto what's going to expect are going to happen at the end of the act.
Well, what does happen then? Tosca appears and tells him that she's killed Scarpia and that the two of them are going to be able to escape, and explains to him that this execution is going to be a mock execution, that Scarpia needed to show, of course, that he's killing Cavaradossi, but that all Cavaradossi has to do is stand there and then fall when he, you know, feels a blank hit him and play dead, and then the two of them can run away into the sunset, or indeed the sunrise, together. And of course, anyone who has seen Tosca once knows, and I'm sorry to give away the ending, but that this is not what's going to happen, that Scarpia has actually double-crossed Tosca in his last moments before she killed him, and they're going to be real bullets. So we watch this. It's extraordinary drama builds up with this kind of repeated figure in the orchestra as Tosca watches the firing squad and sort of narrates for us what's going on.
Yes, indeed. And because actually people, once they go to opera, you don't go to Tosca once, say, oh, I know how it ends now, that's it then. You go again and again and again, and I think Puccini builds in our expectation of we know what's going to happen, the shock will only happen once. And that crescendo, that build-up as the firing squad come on, and you look with pity at Tosca, who thinks it's going to be OK. Some Cavaradossis believe her, some don't. That'll depend on the tenor. Mm. Placido Domingo always sort of went, oh, yeah, I bet that's not going to happen. But others do. I mean, Pavarotti always seemed to believe that, oh, I'm going to be fine then, that's great, you know.
But whatever happens, Tosca clearly believes, and it's the kind of mismatch, in a way, between her innocence saying, that's right, keep on acting.
Yes, you know, and then when it goes down, she says, brilliant, what an artist. And you think, oh, he really is dead. You know, yeah.
And so then at the very end, Tosca, knowing that the secret police have found out that she's killed Scarpia, are coming for her as well. Her Cavaradossi is dead, so she throws herself off the top of the building.
And of course, there are loads of stories about this, but actually it's always a terrifying moment in the theatre. And I'll never forget Angela doing this. She went straight for the battlements, didn't look to see where she was going to land, apparently, threw her arms up in the air, just went straight for the battlements and over, in one great big movement, and the train of her dress was caught in the air as she went. And I thought that is one of the great leaps, one of the great Tosca leaps, and it took us all by surprise. And of course, her last remark is, Scarpia, we meet before God.
So perhaps it is all about Scarpia then, if that's where Puccini leaves us. Listen, before we hear Act Three, I just wanted to mention something which happens at the beginning, which is these bells.
Mm.
Puccini really carefully notated the sound of the bells in Rome, didn't he?
You've been so right to talk about the location, because it was very important to him. He sat on the top of Castel San Angelo listening to the 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock bells playing. They're staggered in Rome, as they are in most big cities, so you don't get the 3 o'clock happening all at once. So what you hear is exactly what he heard. He was very, very precise about the pitch and the placing of the sounds. So there's some bells at the end of the city, and there's the big E-flat bell. And wonderfully, nowadays in many opera houses, they'll record that, because you can't have a church bell in the wings. It's just tons and tons of metal. But sometime in the 70s, I think it was, the LCC were getting rid of their gas piping. And the head of our percussion, Nigel Bates, was asked to go over.
This is at the Opera House?
Yes, and muck around with these bits of, as I understand the story, bits of gas piping. And he found one huge bit of piping that was a perfect E-flat. And we have a bit of gas piping in the wings, and the percussionist climbs a stepladder with a great big four-pound hammer and bangs this bit of gas piping, and you get the E-flat. And that's what you'll hear at the top of the show.
So Act Three of Puccini's Tosca. We'll hear A Shepherd Boy at the start, which is sung by Filippo Turkheimer. The jailer is John Morrissey, Jung Jung Jo as Sciarrone, and Hubert Francis as Spoletta. And Jonas Kaufmann, Cavaradossi, Angela Gheorghiu as Tosca, and Antonio Pappano conducting the orchestra of the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden.
questa onora, un sacerdote i vostri cenni attende.
No, ma un'ultima grazia io vi richiedo.
Se posso.
Io lascio scrivan sol motto. Unico resto di mia ricchezza è questo anel. Se promettete di consegnarle il mio ultimo addio, esso è vostro.
Scrivete.
Sempre il sogno mio d'amore, l'ora è fuggita, e muri, ritevi a lenga mostro l'idea, già la soppreda moro a gervà.
Thank you. colpo il mestiere che tu subito cada.
Non temere, che cadrò sul momento, e al naturale.
Ma stammi attento di non farti male, conoscieni pazienza, io saprei la movenza.
Parlami ancora, come di ansi parlavi, e così dice suantello, tua voce.
Uniti gli sonanti di conterente mondo i nostri amori,
Mario! Mario! Su, presto, andiamo! Su, su! Mario! Mario!
Scarpia, we meet before God, the final cry of Tosca as she flings herself from the Castel Sant'Angelo in Rome. The closing moments of Puccini's Tosca, the opera you voted to hear this evening as the BBC's Opera Passion Day reaches its conclusion. That was a recording of Tosca which Radio 3 made back in 2011 of Jonathan Kent's production at the Royal Opera House in Covent Garden. Antonio Pappano conducting, and really three of the finest living opera singers in the main roles. Angela Giorgio as Tosca, Jonas Kaufmann as her lover, Mario Cavaradossi, and Bryn Terville as Baron Scarpia, who died at the end of Act Two. Sarah Lenton's been my guest this evening. Sarah, what are you left with at the end of Tosca?
Well, of course, Puccini is a musical genius. But what I love about him as well, he's a total, total professional. And listening to this, I didn't even have to see the stage. I could just... the drama was so there in the music. And I was remembering something he wrote at the end of his life when he said, "The Almighty touched me with his little finger and said, write for the theatre, mind, only for the theatre. And I have obeyed the supreme command."
And indeed he did.
And he did, yeah.
Sarah Lenton, thank you so much for joining us this evening on Opera Passion Day. It's not quite over on Radio 3, of course. The writer Rachel Cook will be here at 10:45 with the essay Stories That Sing, exploring the trappings that surround opera going and what really makes it worth it, in case what you just heard didn't convince you. So stay tuned for that. And I also seriously recommend going to BBC Arts Online to see Jonas Kaufmann singing the title role in Verdi's Otello, which you can also hear this Saturday on Opera on 3. And let's hear music by Verdi now. But a rare bit of chamber music, his E minor string quartet performed by the Amadeus Quartet.
Thank you. Thank you.
A rare piece of chamber music by Giuseppe Verdi, his E minor string quartet, which he wrote only because he found himself with extra time on his hands. His soprano in the Naples premiere of Aida was ill and they had to postpone it for a few days, in which time Verdi wrote that four-movement quartet and had it performed for his friends in his hotel room. The performance we just heard was by the Amadeus Quartet. You're listening to BBC Radio 3 with me, Sarah Moore-Peach, on Opera Passion Day. We've already been treated this evening to a tremendous recording of Tosca from the Royal Opera House a few years ago, starring Angela Gheorghiu and Jonas Kaufmann. And I have another recording of Jonas Kaufmann coming up shortly. But first, let's hear another piece of non-operatic music by a great opera composer, Wagner, and a 10-minute self-contained piano sonata in A-flat for the album of Mathilde Wesendonck.
Thank you.
I wonder if you tuned into Radio 3 in the middle of that, would you have guessed it was by Wagner? Pier Paolo Vincenzi playing Wagner's A-flat major piano sonata for Matilda Wesendonck. You're listening to Opera Passion Day with me, Sarah Moore-Peach, part of the BBC's opera season. On Saturday evening at 6:30 here on Radio 3, you can hear the great tenor Jonas Kaufmann in Verdi's Otello from this past summer's Royal Opera House production. So here now is Jonas Kaufmann in Otello's final moments, standing over the lifeless body of his wife, Desdemona.
In cielo assai
Un altro bacio, just one more kiss, Otello's final words in Verdi's Shakespearean opera, and Otello sung there by Jonas Kaufmann on his Verdi album with the Orchestra of Parma Opera, conducted by Pier Giorgio Morandi. Jonas Kaufmann sings Otello in the production from this past summer at the Royal Opera House here on Radio 3 on Saturday night. And you can also watch it on BBC Arts Online as part of the BBC's opera season. And if you go to BBC Arts Online, there you can also find John Bridcutt's fascinating documentary about Kaufmann, A Tenor for the Ages.
I'm Alexandra Wilson, an opera historian, and I invite you to step back into 1920s London, where opera thrives in some unexpected places. There are some curious practices.
Sometimes the chorus didn't even sing in the same language themselves. Different people sang in different languages, according to what they knew.
And unlikely performers.
I went to hear these little fellows, boys of 12 and 13, do the magic flute in the parish rooms. The results were really extraordinary.
Join me for A Flapper's Guide to the Opera this Sunday at 6:45 and afterwards on the BBC Radio 3 website.
This is BBC Radio 3. It's just gone 11:15. Time now for The Essay. Part of the opera season on Radio 3, Stories That Sing, is a series of personal reflections from five very different writers on their experiences of and attitudes towards opera. Tonight, the journalist and author Rachel Cook confronts her own struggles with opera and its reputation.
In the early 90s, not long out of university, I lived in Glasgow, a city to which my newspaper in London had dispatched me that I might learn my trade. Knowing no one, I was lonely there, and it was my firm policy to accept every invitation I received, which is how it came to be that one balmy spring night, a man called Jamie Hunter Blair arrived in a gleaming chauffeur-driven car at the door of the tenement where I rented a single room. In this vehicle, which smelled powerfully of leather wax and Trumper's extract of limes, he was going to whisk me to the opera in Edinburgh. I had met Hunter Blair on assignment at his ancestral castle in Ayrshire. An old Etonian, he was then in his 60s, ruddy-faced and improbably posh, but very game. The editor had instructed me to find Scotland's most eligible bachelors, and this one, in possession of 200 acres of parkland, was seemingly perfectly happy to bounce on a four-poster bed for the benefit of our photographer. Some days later, after my slightly teasing piece had appeared, the office phone rang. Hunter Blair's voice boomed out. Would I like to accompany him to Aida? Sticking to my policy, I told him that yes, I would love to. So fervent was my tone, he assumed that not only was I a regular opera-goer, but that Verdi was a particular favourite of mine. Neither of these things was true. I had never been to the opera before, but how I wanted them to be. I was nervous. The internet hadn't happened then, and the Rough Guide to Opera, later to become my Bible, was 5 years from publication. I knew nothing about Aida, except that it